We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 2nd chapter, verses 44 to 55. We'll finish the chapter. Verse 44. Sri Rajovacha Atha Bhagavatam Bruta Yatarma Yadishaninam Tata Chavatiya Bhutaya Linga Bhagavatiya. Maharaj Nimi said, "Now please tell me in greater detail about the devotees of the Supreme Lord. What are the natural symptoms by which I can distinguish between the most advanced devotees, those on the middle level, and those who are neophytes? What are the typical religious activities of a Vaishnava? And how does he speak? Specifically, please describe those symptoms and characteristics by which Vaishnavas become dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Mukam makarati vakshanam gangam langate giving yakitam tahan bande shi guru jiratarinam. Om Agyana Timiranasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshumiritam Yena Tasame Shri Gurave Namah. Okay, we have our second question from Maharaj Nimi about the different symptoms, behavior, speech, and nature and religious principles of a Vaishnava. And before that, let's review a little bit of the last class. What do you remember from the last class? Yes. Right. By performing devotional service, one becomes free from fear, which arises from turning away from Krishna. Okay, offer obeisance to Krishna, earth, water, fire, air, every living being. Yes, Shri Shuka.
The question was, what is the highest good? And the highest good is Bhagavad Dharma, which means acting with one's body, mind, soul, and with purified intelligence in the service of Krishna.
Okay. Bhagavad Dharma is the answer to the question, what is the highest good? Yes, Kalpit? Secret of success, to have faith in the words of the spiritual master. Yes, yes. You can run with closed eyes. Bhakti is so perfect, you will not fail. You will not fall, also. Not fail and not fall. Yes? Indifferent to which cannot be used in Krishna's service. Okay. Yes?
The three effects of devotional service: directive experience of Krishna, devotion, and detachment from this world.
Three effects of taking shelter of the Lord: devotional service is bhakti, devotion, and detachment and direct experience of the Lord. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, you weren't here, were you?
Well, if you're in devotional service.
Okay, her question is, what cannot be used in devotional service? Meat, fish, eggs, liquor, chocolate? I don't know. Some people offer chocolate. Yeah, so these things cannot be used. What Krishna doesn't like. Yes. Yes? Holy name establishes one as eternal. By chanting the holy name, one becomes eternal servant of Krishna. Okay? 42nd verse. Yes?
If we eat more, then we will feel detest from food.
Yes.
But if we worship more and engage in devotional service, then we will feel more attached to Krishna.
If we eat more, we'll become detached. But if we do more devotional service, we become more attached to Krishna. So in that way, the analogy is different, doesn't hold. Yes. Shruti and Smriti are the two eyes of the Brahmana. Interesting, yes.
In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the Bhakti Shastras are saying that attachment, jnana and vairagya can be unfavorable to Krishna consciousness, but they can also become servants of bhakti, and this verse is the demonstration of all these attachment, detachment, and knowledge can become the byproducts and servants of bhakti.
Right. Okay, so we'll go on. The next three verses are not on your list to learn, but they're also important verses. They could be learned, although you won't be responsible for them. And these are the verses on the Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanishta Arikaris. So verse 45. Shri Havir Bhavacha Sarvabhuteshu Yapashed Bhagavatavamatmana Bhutani Bhagavatatman Yesha Bhagavatotama. Shri Havir said, the most advanced devotee sees that within everything the soul of all souls, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. Consequently, he sees systematically everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and understands that everything that exists is eternally situated within the Lord. So verse 41 described the vision, and now we are hearing about the person who has this vision, the Uttamadhikari. So this is just one verse, and then we'll have a verse on the Madhyama and the Kanishta, and then many more verses on the Uttama. So you can really understand the highest level of devotional service. So we'll read some of this huge purport. It begins with a quote from Bhagavad Gita. Yo mam pashati sarvacha sarvam chamai pashati tasyaham na panashyami sachame na panashyati. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Prabhupada comments, a person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna, knowing everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, when he was visiting Sumati Maharaji before he went to the West, he passed by the land at Juhu, and what did he see? He didn't see a bunch of trees and grass. He saw a temple. He saw a temple of Krishna, Radharas Bihari. So the way the pure devotee sees and the way an ordinary person sees is quite different. Of course, we're also seeing now the difference between an Uttama and a Madhyama and a Anishta. So Prabhupada, he saw a temple on that vacant land. Yeah, I know. I know. They found, what was it, a plaque? I thought they found a deity.
I think it was on a...
It was a well. It was a well. On an old well, they found that plaque.
A plaque.
It was a plaque, yeah.
Which it was a dedication for a temple of Hanuman.
A dedication for Hanuman temple. And they dug the foundation of the Juhu. And it's not an accident that Lord Shiva's temple is facing our temple. Right across the street, there's Lord Shiva. He knew that Krishna. He was just waiting for Krishna to come. Yes.
In Ujjain also, when they dug the foundation, they just where they were going to put the deities, just underneath what was going to be the altar, there was a golden deity of Anantashesh.
Oh, and that, you know what that means. There was a temple there before. There was a temple, because that's what they put in the foundation. They put a golden Anantashesh. Okay, so let's go on about the devotee. Qualification for seeing Krishna everywhere, stated in Brahma Samhita. Premanjana shtirita bhakti vilochanena santas deva hidayeshu vilokayanti yang shama sundarana chintya guna swarupa govindamari purushantavan bhajame. Worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by devotee, whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He's seen in his eternal form as Shyam Sundar, situated within the heart of the devotee. So then he compares Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Prahlad could see in the pillar, he could see the Supreme Lord. Then the next one, a pure devotee is completely free from the tendency to enjoy things separately from the Lord's service. He does not see anything in the universe as unfavorable, because he sees everything as the expanded potency of the Supreme Personality of God. Such a devotee's purpose in existing is to give pleasure somehow or other to the Supreme Lord. Thus everything a devotee, pure devotee, experiences moment by moment increases his ecstatic loving desire to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord. So now we will go to paragraph 7. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is interesting. A Kanishta Adhikari Guru, one who is simply attached to performing religious ceremonies and worshipping the deity, without appreciation for other Vaishnavas, especially those who are preaching the message of the Lord, will especially appeal to persons interested in jaya cultivation of knowledge. As a living entity develops mundane piety, he proudly devotes himself to regulated work and nobly tries to detach himself from the fruits of his work. So this goes on about detached work. And then he becomes an altruist, and if he's fortunate, he comes to devotional service. Desiring a mere intellectual understanding of devotional service, such a pious materialist may seek shelter at the feet of a Kanishta Adhikari. If able to advance to the Madhyama qualification, he then becomes attracted to a Vaishnava, actively engaged in preaching Krishna consciousness. And fully mature in the platform of intermediate devotion, he becomes attracted to the Mahabhagavat level and is awarded a glimpse of the exalted position of Mahabhagavat spiritual master by the grace of Krishna within his heart. So then it goes on to there, Upadeshamrita. Who is the...
Where are you reading from?
The purport, paragraph 7. In the end of that paragraph, in Upadeshamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami has described the stage of life as Bhajana Vigyam Ananyam Anyanindari Shunyahidam. So it means that he's not envious, he doesn't criticize anyone. Then the next paragraph, 8. A Mahabhagavat, being empowered by the Supreme Lord, Yogeshwara, is endowed with a supernatural power to inspire and give success to the Madhyama Adhikari who follows in his footsteps, and to elevate a Kanishta Adhikari gradually to the intermediate platform. Such devotional power springs automatically from the ocean of mercy found within the heart of a pure devotee. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out, a Mahabhagavat has no desire to inflict punishment on the enemies of the Lord. Rather, he engages the Madhyama Adhikaris and Kanishta Adhikaris in preaching work to purify the polluted mentality of the inimical souls who are falsely imagining the material world to be separate from Krishna. So, I'll read a quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya also talks about this in terms who is the highest devotee. He's talking about Ramananda Roy. Prabhu kahe tumi mahabhagavottamam tomar darshane sabad javakhailamam. So sometimes people ask, what's the difference between Mahabhagavat and Uttama? So here Lord Chaitanya puts the two words together, Mahabhagavottamam. You're the highest Mahabhagavat, he's telling Ramananda Roy. Because you are the best of the topmost devotees, therefore simply the sight of you has melted everyone's heart. Stavar jangam deke na deke taramurti savacha hoi nija ishta devasvurti. The Mahabhagavat, advanced devotee, certainly sees everything mobile and immobile, but he does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada explains what this means, that as soon as a devotee sees something, movable or inert, he immediately remembers Krishna. So he remembers Krishna. Whatever he sees reminds him of Krishna. A tree, a book, or what, anything. 24 hours a day he sees Krishna, nothing else. As far as movable and inert things are concerned, devotee sees them all as transformations of Krishna's energy. Then Lord Chaitanya continued, a person advanced in devotional service sees within everything the soul of souls, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Consequently, he always sees the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the cause of all causes and understands that all things are situated in him. So the gopis had this vision. There is one of their prayers in the 10th canto, 35th chapter, which shows how they could see Krishna in everything. And this verse is quoted also in Chaitanya Charitamrita as an example of seeing Krishna in everything. This is Vanalatastarava Atmani Vishnu Vyanjayanti Vapushpa Falatya Pranata Paravita Parmatutara Premarishta Tanavava Vishu Sma. This is 10:35-9. The plants, creepers, and trees were full of fruits and flowers due to ecstatic love of Krishna. Indeed, being so full, they were bowing down. They were inspired by such deep love for Krishna, they were constantly pouring showers of honey. In this way, the gopis saw the forests of Vrindavan. They saw the trees, the creepers, their flowers as an offering to Krishna. They saw the trees were bowing down, the creepers were bowing down, offering everything to Krishna. So this is whatever they saw reminded them of Krishna. So then Lord Chaitanya explains in Madhya 1674 how to tell if someone is a Mahabhagavat. Ninjahar darshane muke aise Krishna nam tahare janihatumi Vaishnava pradhan. Lord Chaitanya said, a first class Vaishnava is he whose very presence makes others chant the holy name of Krishna. So if you see someone, then immediately you want to chant, that person's a Mahabhagavat, if he inspires you to chant. And Prabhupada quotes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who says, if an observer immediately remembers the holy name of Krishna upon seeing a Vaishnava, that Vaishnava should be considered a Mahabhagavat. Such a Vaishnava is always aware of his Krishna conscious duty, and he's enlightened in self-realization. He's always in love with Krishna, and this love is without adulteration. Because of this love, he's always awake to transcendental realization. He sees everything connected with Krishna. He's able to chant the holy name of Krishna perfectly. He has transcendental eyes to see who is sleeping under the spell of Maya, and he engages himself in awakening sleeping conditioned beings by spreading the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. He opens eyes that are closed by forgetfulness of Krishna. And so, then there's a quote from Madhya Lila 6:279. Lohake avatsparshi hema nahi kare tavatsparshi mani keho chiniti napare. One cannot understand the value of touchstone until it turns iron into gold. One should judge by action, not by promises. A Mahabhagavat can turn a living entity from abominable material life to the Lord's service. This is the test of a Mahabhagavat. And Prabhupada says, although preaching is not meant for a Mahabhagavat, so generally the Uttama definition, he does not preach. So Prabhupada says here, preaching is not meant for a Mahabhagavat. A Mahabhagavat can descend to the platform of Madhyama just to convert others to Vaishnavas. Actually, a Mahabhagavat is fit to spread Krishna consciousness, but he does not distinguish where Krishna consciousness should be spread from where it should not. So this is the difference. Some Madhyama may think, okay, these people are very nice, I'll preach to them, but maybe not these people. He thinks everyone is competent to accept Krishna consciousness if the chance is provided. A neophyte and an intermediate devotee should always be eager to hear the Mahabhagavat and serve him in every respect. And they can gradually rise to the platform of Uttama and become first-class devotees. Okay? Now we will hear a conversation between Srila Prabhupada and Bob Cohen, the Peace Corps worker, who later became Brahmatirtha Prabhu. So Bob is asking Prabhupada, I ask you this very humbly, but do you feel diseases and sicknesses? Prabhupada said, Do you personally feel disease and sickness? Prabhupada said, yes. Bob says, is this a result of your past karma? Prabhupada said, yes. And Bob said, so, One in this material world never escapes his karma completely. Prabhupada said, yes, he escapes. No more karma for a devotee. No more karmic reaction. Bob said, but you must be the best devotee. Prabhupada said, no, I don't consider myself the best devotee. I'm the lowest. Bob said, no. Prabhupada said, you are the best devotee. So this is Uttama. This is Uttama in action. Bob said, oh, no, no, no. But see, you say, what you say always seems right. Prabhupada said, yes. Bob said, then you must be the best devotee. And then Prabhupada said, the thing is, even the best devotee, when he preaches, comes to the second-class platform of a devotee. And Bob said, well, what would the best devotee be doing? Prabhupada said, the best devotee does not preach. Bob said, well, what does he do? Prabhupada says, he sees there's no need of preaching for him. Everyone's a devotee. And Bob laughs heartily. Prabhupada said, yes, he sees no more non-devotees, all devotees. He's called Uttamadhikari. But while I am preaching, how can I say I am the best devotee? Just like Radharani, she does not see anyone as a non-devotee. Therefore, we try to approach Radharani. Bob said, who is this? Prabhupada said, Radharani, Krishna's consort. Bob said, ah. Prabhupada said, if anyone approaches Radharani, she recommends to Krishna, here is the best devotee, he's better than me. And Krishna cannot refuse him. That is the best devotee. But it is not to be imitated. I have become the best devotee. A second-class devotee has the vision, some are envious of God, but this is not the vision of the best devotee. Best devotee sees nobody's envious of God, everyone's better than me. Just like Chaitanya Charitamrita's author, Krishnadas Kaviraj, he says, I'm lower than the worm in the stool. Purishir kitta hoite muise lagishta. He's not making a show, he's feeling like that. I'm the lowest, everyone is best, but I'm the lowest. Everyone's engaged in Krishna's service, I'm not engaged. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, oh, I have not a pinch of devotion to Krishna. I cry to make a show. If I had been a devotee of Krishna, I would have died long ago. But I'm living. This is the proof I do not love Krishna. That is the vision of the best devotee. He is so absorbed in Krishna's love, he says, everything is going on, but I'm the lowest. Therefore, I cannot see God. That is the best devotee. Bob said, so, a devotee must work for everyone's liberation. Prabhupada said, yes, a devotee must work under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, not imitate the best devotee. Bob said, excuse me? Prabhupada said, one should not imitate the best devotee. Then Shyamasundar says, one time you said, sometimes you feel sickness or pain due to the sinful activities of your devotees. Can sometimes disease be due to that, caused by that? Prabhupada said, you see, Krishna says, aham tong sarvapape bhyo mokshiyashami mashicha. I will deliver you from sinful reaction. Do not fear. So Krishna is so powerful. He can immediately take up all the sins of others, immediately make them right. But when a living entity plays a part on behalf of Krishna, he also takes responsibility for the sinful activities of his devotees. Therefore, to become a guru is not an easy task, you see. He has to take all the poisons and absorb them. So sometimes, because he's not Krishna, sometimes there is some trouble. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has forbidden, don't make many disciples. But for preaching work, we have to accept many disciples for expanding preaching, even if we suffer. That's a fact. Spiritual master has to take responsibility for all the sinful activities of his disciples. Therefore, to make many disciples is a risky job unless one is able to assimilate all the sins. And he goes on about Jesus, and he says, so because the guru, Krishna is Krishna, he cannot be attacked by sin. But a living entity is sometimes subjected to their influence because he's so small. If big fire and small fire, if you put some big thing in a small fire, the fire itself may be extinguished. Put in a big fire, whatever you put in is all right. The big fire can consume anything. So then Bob asked Prabhupada, oh, I see. I have another question on prasad, if I may. Let us say some devotee has some trouble and does not eat a certain type of food, like some devotees don't eat ghee because of liver trouble. So these devotees, should they take all the prasad? Prabhupada said, no, no, those who are not perfect devotees may discriminate. But a perfect devotee does not discriminate. Why should you imitate a perfect devotee? So long as you have discrimination, you're not a perfect devotee. So why should you artificially imitate a perfect devotee and eat everything? Point is, a perfect devotee does not make any discrimination. Whatever is offered to Krishna is nectar. That's all. Krishna accepts anything from a devotee. Whatever is offered to me by my devotee, he accepts. Same thing for a devotee. Don't you see the point? A perfect devotee does not make any discrimination. But if I'm not a perfect devotee and I have discrimination, why shall I imitate the perfect devotee? It may not be possible for me to digest everything because I'm not a perfect devotee. Devotee should not be foolish. Okay. Perfect devotee. Now you know, I hope. Prabhupada is explaining. And he's showing what is an uttama. What is an uttama adhikari? How he feels. How an uttama feels. So the next verse is on the madhyama. Ishore tadadhine shu bali sheshuri satsucha prema maichi kripopeksha yakkaroti samadhyama. An intermediate or second-class devotee called Madhyama Adhikari offers his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a sincere friend to all the devotees of the Lord, shows mercy to ignorant people who are innocent, and disregards those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll read something from the purport, paragraph 2. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, although a second-class devotee is eager to preach to the innocent conditioned souls, he should avoid the atheistic class of men so he'll not become disturbed or polluted by their association. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has confirmed a Vaishnava should be indifferent to those who are envious of the Supreme Lord. So here's another case of what you should be indifferent to if you're a preacher. It is practically seen when such persons are informed of the glories of the Lord, they attempt to ridicule the Lord, thus further deteriorating their polluted existence. So therefore we don't preach to those who are envious, because then they'll just blaspheme, and then we have to hear it. So it's not good to antagonize them. Now in paragraph 3, about 4 lines down, according to Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, if a Vaishnava preacher encounters one who is envious of him, the preacher should remain far away from such an envious person, but the Vaishnava preacher may meditate upon ways to save the envious class of men. Such meditation is called sad-achar, saintly behavior. And Jiva Goswami gives Prahlad Maharaj as the example. Although a Vaishnava preacher constantly meditates on the welfare of all living entities, he will not associate with those who are unreceptive to the message of Krishna. In this regard, Vishwanath Chakravarti states, even Bharat Maharaj, Vyasadeva, and Shukadeva do not exhibit their mercy indiscriminately. Now we go to paragraph 4. 1, 2, 3. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has given an elaborate explanation to prove the discrimination employed by a Madhyama Adhikari preacher does not at all show a lack of mercy. He says, upeksha, neglect, is the proper medicine for those who are inimical to the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Indifference from the preacher checks feelings of hostility on both sides. So better to neglect. Paragraph 6, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has strongly rejected those foolish persons who under a plea of mercy and equal vision perceive a faithless person is also a devotee of the Supreme Lord and try to thrust the Hari Nam or holy name upon such offensive people. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta has stated, when childish people think themselves Mahabhagwats and act in defiance of the Vaishnava spiritual master, such behavior simply holds them back from receiving the mercy of the Vaishnava guru. So if you think you're better than a Madhyama, and you think you want to preach to the faithless, then go ahead, and it's an offense to the holy name as well. And you won't get the mercy of your guru. Bewildered by false ego, these self-proclaimed devotees gradually become fit to be ignored by pure devotees on the intermediate platform and are cheated of the mercy that comes from the devotees' satisfaction. Thus they become asadhu by constantly committing offenses against the devotees who preach the holy name of Krishna. Pure devotees in all circumstances display indifference to those who falsely imagine themselves to be Vishuddha Bhaktas or pure devotees of the Lord. So that's another indifference, not only to the envious, but those who think they're uttamas. This indifference is an excellent manifestation of their mercy. So, interesting comment. That's why I thought to read it. Now, last two paragraphs of this purport. The wonderful loving dealings between Vaishnavas on the topmost platform are demonstrated in the pastimes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. In other words, although a Vaishnava sees every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna, he must discriminate in his external behavior so as not to interfere with the original purpose of the Lord's creation, which is to reform the living entities so they can gradually come back home, back to Godhead. A pure devotee does not foolishly pretend equal vision and approach envious persons. Rather, he respects the mission of the Lord as stated in Gita by the words, Ye yatamam prapadyante tam sataiva pajam yaham. Oops.
Where is this?
That was the third to the last. I got the wrong one, but somehow Krishna wanted me to read that. I meant second to the last paragraph. On the other hand, if it is the Lord's desire, a pure devotee can offer his respects to all living beings. Jiva Goswami mentions Uddhava and other pure devotees were always prepared to offer respectful obeisances even to such persons as Duryodhana. Okay. So the difference between Uttama and Madhyama. Madhyama cannot at any time perceive the presence of the Supreme Lord within all living beings, whereas an Uttama, however he acts on the second-class platform to carry out the Lord's mission, is aware that every living entity is ultimately a forgetful Krishna-conscious living entity. Well, okay. Then he says, although he may externally engage in the behavior, four different types of behavior of the Madhyama, he's not necessarily on the second-class platform, since an Uttama may also exhibit these symptoms to carry out the Lord's mission. Okay. So now we'll read a little bit from Chaitanya Charitamrita again. This is Madhya 16:72. Krishna nama nirantar jahar padane shevaishnava shrestha bhajo tahar charane. A person who is always chanting the holy name of the Lord is to be considered a first-class Vaishnava, and your duty is to serve his lotus feet. This is actually Madhyama. In the purport, Prabhupada says, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, any Vaishnava who is constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord should be considered to have attained the second platform of Vaishnavism. So, Madhyama is not a cheap thing. To be a Madhyama, according to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you are constantly chanting the holy name. Such a devotee is superior to neophyte Vaishnava who has just learned to chant the holy name. A neophyte devotee simply tries to chant the holy name, whereas an advanced devotee is accustomed to chanting and takes pleasure in it. Such an advanced devotee is called a Madhyama Bhagavat, which indicates he has attained the intermediate stage between neophyte and perfect devotee. Generally, a devotee in the intermediate stage becomes a preacher. Okay, neophyte or ordinary person should worship the Madhyama Bhagavat. And he talks about the word nirantara, without cessation. What does this mean? Without interval. If one has desires other than a desire to perform devotional service, sometimes you do service, sometimes you go for sense gratification, his service will be interrupted. So a pure devotee should have no desire other than to serve Krishna. Above karma and jnana. Another meaning of antara is this body. The body is an impediment to self-realization because it's always engaged in sense gratification. Antara, so another interruption may be money. If money is not used in Krishna's service, it's an impediment. Antara means janata, people in general. Association of ordinary persons may destroy the principles of devotional service. And antara means greed, greed to acquire more money or enjoy more sense gratification. Finally, the word antara may also mean atheistic ideas by which one considers the deity to be made of stone, wood, or gold. All of these are impediments. Okay. Now, there's a very enigmatic quote at the end of this purport of Madhya Lila. It's talking about intermediate devotee is greatly attracted to chanting the holy name. By chanting, he's elevated to the platform of love. He preaches to innocent neophytes and stresses the importance of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Now here's the interesting quote. An intermediate devotee can identify the non-devotee or motivated devotee. The motivated devotee or non-devotee are on the material platform and they are called prakriti. The intermediate devotee does not mix with such materialistic people. However, he understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everything related to him are on the same transcendental platform. Actually, none of them are mundane. So, figure that one out. He sees them as material, but he understands that everything's transcendental. Okay. We'll go to the Kanishta, verse 47. Archayam eva haraye pujam ya shahayate atabhakte shachanyeshu sabhakta prakita smitaha. A devotee who faithfully engages in worship of the deity in the temple but does not behave properly toward other devotees or people in general is called a prakita bhakta, a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. Srila Madhvacharya comments that one in the lowest stage of devotional service faithfully worships the deity in the temple, but is not aware of the Supreme Personality of God. It is actually all-pervading. So he gives the example here in the purport of the Western countries, where people commit all types of sinful activities in their homes and in the street, but then piously go to church and pray to God for mercy. So on Sunday, everybody goes to church, and next week, everyone will celebrate Christmas. But in the meantime, all kinds of things are going on, kinds of sinful activities. He says something nice here. Actually, God is in our home. God is in the street. God is in our office. God is in the forest. God is everywhere. Therefore, God should be worshipped everywhere by the process of devotional service at his lotus feet. And he quotes the previous verse, 41. Then paragraph 3, Madhvacharya states, a Kanishta Adhikari has no idea the Supreme Lord has the power to exist outside a church or a temple. Furthermore, being puffed up by his own ceremonial worship, Kanishta Adhikari cannot imagine anyone is more pious or religious than he, and he is not even aware other devotees are more advanced. Thus he cannot understand the Madhyama or Uttama standard of devotional service. Sometimes, because of this false pride, he criticizes the more advanced devotees of the Lord, neglects them, or simply has no understanding of their exalted position as preachers or completely self-realized souls. Yes. So this happens sometimes. People make their own movements based on criticism of the advanced devotees, sometimes, different movements. Okay, so we'll go to 4. Oh, this is a huge perfect. From the end. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from the end. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, all the plenary expansions of the Lord mentioned above descend into this world and enter within the deity. Now we're going to hear about the deity, who exhibits the function of the supersoul by accompanying the daily life of the Vaishnava. Although the vaibhav or pastime expansions of Lord incarnate at specific times, the supersoul in deity forms are constantly available for the spiritual advancement of the devotees in this world. As one comes to the Madhyamadhikari, one is able to understand the expansions of the Supreme Lord, whereas the Kanishta's entire knowledge of the Lord is limited to the deity. Nonetheless, Krishna is so kind that to encourage even the lowest class of Vaishnavas, he condenses all of his various forms into the deity, so that by worshipping the deity, the Kanishta Adhikari devotee is worshipping all the forms of the Lord. As the devotee makes advancement, he can understand these forms as they appear in their own way, both within this world and in the spiritual sky. Then he gives the example of Mahaj Pratapuruja, who saw Lord Chaitanya in Lord Chaitanya's outer cloth and worshipped that cloth as Lord Chaitanya. Third to the last. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the inability of the Kanishta Adhikari to appreciate the Lord's devotees' entourage and paraphernalia indicates such a materialistic Vaishnava is still affected by the speculative understanding of karmavadis and mayavadis. Srila Prabhupada often said, only the impersonalist desires to see Krishna alone. We desire to see Krishna with his cows, friends, parents, gopis, flute, jewelry, forest, scenery, and so on. Krishna is gorgeous in the setting of Vrindavan. It is in the land of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna is surrounded by so many beautiful associates, manifests his exalted, indescribable beauty. Similarly, the unique mercy of the Supreme Personality of God is exhibited in the activities of his pure devotees, who selflessly travel around the universe, distributing the dust particles from Krishna's lotus feet on the heads of the conditioned souls. One who is uninterested in the Lord's paraphernalia, entourage, and devotees has a stunted conception of the Supreme Personality of God. This must be due to contamination from a personal and sensuous understanding of life. So then, we go to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhu kahe jara mukhe shuni ekbar Krishnam se puja sheshto shabakar. Lord Chaitanya said, whoever chants the holy name of Krishna just once is worshipable and is the topmost human being. So there you have it. Purport, Shibhaktisthanta Saraswati Thakur says, a person who simply chants the holy name of Krishna once becomes perfect and should be regarded as a Vaishnava. Confirmed by Sri Rupa Goswami in Upadeshamrita, with such faith in the holy name, one may begin a life of Krishna consciousness. But, here's the but, an ordinary person cannot chant the holy name of Krishna with such faith. One should accept the holy name of Krishna as identical with Krishna himself. When one is situated on the neophyte platform, one cannot understand devotional ingredients of a pure, unalloyed devotee. However, when the novice engages in devotional service, especially in deity worship, and follows the order of a bona fide spiritual master, he is a pure devotee. Okay? So, if we are a neophyte, don't worry. Just follow the order of the spiritual master and be happy. This is Madhya 15:106. In other words, any devotee who believes the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord is a pure devotee. This is Prabhupada speaking. Even though he may be in the neophyte stage, by his association, others may also become Vaishnavas. So even Kanishthas can preach. Some people say, no, you have to be an Uttama to preach, pure devotee. But actually, Prabhupada said, even the neophytes are pure devotees if they believe the holy name is Krishna, and if they follow the order of a bona fide spiritual master. So you can also be considered a pure devotee, and you can also preach even if you're a neophyte. Now, Prabhupada talked about what is a Kanishta Adhikari in one conversation about Varnashram in Mayapur, 1977. Prabhupada said, Kanishta Adhikari means he must be a Brahmin. That is Kanishta Adhikari. Kanishta Adhikari means he must be a qualified Brahmin. That is Kanishta. What is esteemed as a very high position in the material world, Brahmin, that is Kanishta Adhikari. Now, Prabhupada. The Brahmin means from the material stage, gradually he's elevated to the spiritual stage. And below the Brahmana, there's no question of Vaishnava. You watch out. So, watch out. Harisari said, no. Prabhupada said, Vaishnava. Shrinvatam Swakatam Krishna, Punya Shavana Kirtana. The Lord cleanses the desire from material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages. So Prabhupada said, you become a Brahmin by becoming a Brahmin, hearing, or by hearing, he becomes a Brahmin. So either a Brahmin is always hearing, or if you just always hear, you'll become a Brahmin, Prabhupada said. And he quotes this verse 1:17. Then the Shuddha quality, Kshatriya Vaishya, finished. Everything is finished. And next stage, Nashta Prayesh Abhadreshu. That the lower qualities are almost completely finished. So that means, again, that you come to the level of Brahman, that means mode of goodness. That is Nishta. Without becoming a Brahman, nobody is interested to hear. Then by hearing, Nashta Prayesh Abhadreshu, the lower qualities, ignorance and passion, these are almost finished. Almost, he said, not completely. By hearing Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, or serving the spiritual master in Krishna conscious movement, you come to Nishta. This devotional service is the first grade quality of Sattva Guna. So there are It's confirmed. Nishta means sattva-gun. You come to the level of a Brahmin. Almost finish, Braja and Tama. Almost finished. Huh.
Well, here Prabhupada says that this is Kanishta?
He said Kanishta is Brahman, material. But then Vaishnava is more. He's saying it's more. He's saying Kanishta is Brahman, materially, like the material Brahman. Yeah, interesting. But when you're a Brahman as a devotee, then that's Nishta, if you're in Sattva-gun. But if you're in Sattva-gun outside, as a like a real Brahmin in Sattva-gun, then that's the highest in the material world. But in devotional service, it's the beginning. It's you become a Brahmin. That's Kanishta, he says. Kanishta is Brahmin. So that's a very high level. Let's read. There's quite a bit here in the Brihadbhagavatamrita. There are verses about this. I won't read all the purports. And this is about the deities. And there's like a kind of a controversy here in this. Gop Kumar is confused because about this fact that, okay, worshipping the deity, then some people who worship the deity are criticized, They're worshipping the deity, but they don't see others. And so Gop Kumar said, I asked, my Lord, divine deity forms of a supreme Godhead, like Lord Purushottam, are present on earth, and you consider them embodiments of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. The one personality of Godhead, whose body is always such an Ananda, mercifully enacts the pastime of being present in various places in various forms. So this is 2:4, verses 202 to verse 14. 2:14. 2:4, verse 202 to 214, page 800. What then could be wrong with worshipping those forms, disregarding everything else? I would think no matter how this is done, it would bring great benefit. So Gopa Kumar is confused on this point about, the neophytes worshipping the deity. But why, therefore, do we hear differing opinions about this from the Puranas? The Puranic statements, coming as they do from the mouths of exalted souls, cannot be less than authoritative. Narada Muni is the first spiritual master for the path of worshipping the deity of the Lord. Upon hearing my question, he stood up, embraced me in extreme ecstasy, and answered in this way. So, Narada said, the deity forms I have mentioned are all equal to the original personality of Godhead. There is no need to even mention the glories of worshipping them. Persons who worship the Lord's deity, be it ancient, new, or even concocted, provided they worship the deity as being directly the Lord himself, will not fall down from their religious status or be otherwise at fault, even if they neglect their prescribed duties and other such principles. Rather, their behavior should be considered exemplary, and such deity worship should be regarded as exalted devotional service yielding the best of fruits. One can reach perfection by honoring even a blade of grass, provided one sees within it the presence of the Supreme Lord. Or, by just once uttering or hearing even a faint semblance of the Lord's name. How then can one find fault in worshipping the deity in whom the Lord personally appears, who evokes remembrance of the Lord, who has been consecrated by mantras, who is the receiver of all kinds of devotional service? Persons who properly worship Krishna in his deity form never disrespect Krishna's devotees. And if, because of being absorbed in worship, they accidentally do so, the devotees make light of such offenses and praise the worshippers. There are others, however, who concoct some new image and call it Lord Hari, but who actually see that form as different from the Lord. So here we find out who are we talking about. They worship with the idea the deity is no more than stone or some other material substance, and they respect neither devotees of Lord Hari nor living beings in general. Proud of their worship, they transgress the injunctions of Vedas and the Lord. These foolish worshippers, the lowest of all the Lord's devotees, do not obtain the promised fruits of worship. So here's the commentary. When criticizing those attached to deity worship, the scriptures are really speaking about offensive worshippers who think the deity only an image of the Lord and not the Lord in person. Such idolaters consider the deity stone, wood, or metal. They concoct their own forms of the Lord unaware the authorized deity appears by his own plan. And they are oblivious to the presence of the Lord in his devotees. Because such offensive worshippers lack proper respect for deity and Vaishnavas, they offend all living entities and violate the basic principles of the Vedas. Interesting. So then they quote this verse. Some Vaishnavas are free from the influence of the modes of nature, and others are still conditioned by goodness, passion, and ignorance. Okay. So there's this huge purport. If you want to read more about it, you can look it up in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's got a purport to compare with the purports in this book that we're reading now in 11th canto. Many, many pages of purport. So you can go into all the pros and cons of this, what this means. Okay, now we will go to the next verse. But before that, I have something from Bhaktisiddhanta. Now, here's an interesting point by Jiva Goswami. You want this one, Abhihad?
You said you have for students.
No, not for students, sorry. You are very eager. But unfortunately, it's not for students. This is Jiva Goswami, and he's talking about the Prakriti devotee. Such a neophyte devotee will eventually get the result of his devotional service, but he will not get it immediately. This will be explained in these words from Bhagavatam 3:29-25. And this verse says, performing his prescribed duties, one should worship the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until one realizes my presence in his own heart and in the hearts of other living entities as well. So they will eventually realize that Krishna is not only there as a deity, he's also in my heart, and he's also in all the other living entities' hearts as well. So an interesting quote. Verse 48, even while engaging his senses in contact. Now we're going to hear more about the Uttama. The rest of the verses are going to be about the Uttama again, more symptoms. Even while engaging his senses in contact with their objects, one who sees this whole world as energy of Lord Vishnu is neither repelled nor elated. He is indeed the greatest among devotees. So even though he's using his body, his senses, in devotional service, he's not attached or he's not detached. He's not repelled and he's not elated. And this is actually the qualification, we'll find out later on in Urdhva Gita, the qualification to engage in devotional service is you can't be too attached and you can't be too detached also. I mean too detached in a negative way. Falgu Vairagya. So in the end of this purport, Jiva Goswami explains, the pure devotee does not cease acting within this world. Rather, he uses his senses in the service of the Lord of the senses, Hishikesha. Hishikena, Hishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. And then he talks, Srirupa Goswami has stated, if one gives up those material things which are favorable for serving Krishna, considering them material and an impediment to his spiritual advancement, his renunciation is merely Falgu Vairagya, or immature and imperfect renunciation. Now the last paragraph, a warning by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati, has warned that by envying any of the three classes of devotees, Uttama, Madhyama, or Kanishtha, one falls down to the platform of impersonalism and loses all power to benefit others or even himself. Therefore, those who are trying to advance in Krishna consciousness should not endanger the transcendental experience by unnecessarily criticizing other Vaishnavas. According to Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati, if one engages in Falgu Vairagya, renouncing material things favorable to the service of the Lord Krishna, one runs the risk of being polluted by impersonal philosophy. On the other hand, by sticking to the principle of yukta vairagya, engaging everything for Krishna without personal desire, one can remain aloof from the danger of material sense gratification and gradually come to the Mahabhagavat platform as mentioned in this verse. Now, this verse 49 is a very interesting verse. If you're having miseries in this world and you want to figure out the cause, here's the verse for you. You can be very analytical. For those who are analytical, we are going to analyze the miseries. Within the material world, one's material body is always subject to birth and decay. Similarly, the life air, the prana, is harassed by hunger and thirst. The mind is always anxious. The intelligence hankers for that which cannot be obtained. And all of the senses are ultimately exhausted by constant struggle in the material nature. A person who is not bewildered by the inevitable miseries of material existence and who remains aloof from them simply by remembering the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be considered Bhagavata Pradhana, the foremost devotee of the Lord. Okay. So we'll go to paragraph 3. The pure devotee of the Lord does not experience material misery because he has given up the bodily concept of life and identifies himself correctly as an eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So if you are experiencing material miseries, you have not gotten to this platform yet of the Uttamadikari. Susukam kartam avyayam, Gita says, even in the stage of regulative practice, the process of bhakti yoga is very joyful. So here we have again Kevala Anandakanda. Lochan Das Thakur says, Kevala Anandakanda, it is the path of bliss. Lord Chaitanya's Harinam Sankirtan movement is Kevala Anandakanda, the pathway of pure bliss. Simply by chanting the holy names, eating prasad, hearing the pastimes of the Lord, one merges in an ocean of bliss called Krishna consciousness. Now we'll go to paragraph 5, analysis by Madhvacharya, because the verse is a little bit enigmatic here about how the body is suffering, the prana, the mind, the intelligence, and all the senses. So Madhvacharya analyzes. He's given an elaborate description of the process by which material miseries arise. How do they arise? When a conditioned soul of demonic mentality identifies himself with a gross material body, he undergoes miseries of constant drowsiness and unquenchable sexual desires that burn all mental peace and serenity to ashes. So if you're thinking you're the body, the main problem is sex desire and sleep. These are the two things that are going to harass you. Now, if a demonic person identifies himself with prana, the life air, he suffers from hunger. Okay, so if you are more into prana, your life, then you're hungry. By identifying himself with the mind, he suffers panic, fear, and hankering that end in disappointment. So if you're having a panic attack, then you're identifying yourself with the mind. When he identifies himself with intelligence, he suffers profound existential bitterness and frustration deep within his heart. So we have some modern Western philosophers who have this problem, that there is no meaning to life, everything is meaningless, and they follow their philosophy. Who was that one? He went and committed suicide because...
Camus.
That was his philosophy, and then he just killed himself because there's no meaning. He had that existential, so his intelligence, he was identifying with his intelligence. Here's a demoniac mentality.
Camus.
C-A-M-U-S, I think, right? When he identifies himself with false ego, he feels inferiority, thinking, I am so low. So if you have an inferiority complex, you're identifying with your false ego, even though you may think it's the opposite. And when he identifies himself with the process of consciousness, he's haunted by memories of the past. So if you're always in the past, lamenting, haunted, then you're identifying yourself, demoniac combined with a citta consciousness. When a demon tries to impose himself as ruler of all living beings, all of these miseries expand simultaneously. So if you want all of them together, just try to control. Try to be the controller. And you'll get the body, the mind, the intelligence, all of them will harass you together. For one who wants to be the controller, especially of others. Such a wonderful analysis of the miseries and what causes them, trying to be the controller. Okay, so Vishwanath comments, one who is not bewildered by the qualities of samsara, such as birth in different bodies, is the best of devotees. He's not bewildered by birth and death concerning the body, by hunger and thirst concerning prana, by fear in the mind, by longing in the intelligence, and by fatigue of the senses. So verse 50. One who has taken exclusive shelter of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva becomes free from fruitive activities which are based on material lust. In fact, one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord is freed from even the desire to enjoy material sense gratification. Plans for enjoying sex life, social prestige, and money cannot develop within his mind. Thus he is considered Bhagavatottama, a pure devotee of the Lord, on the highest platform. So we're hearing a very elaborate description of the highest devotee. Verse 51, birth in an aristocratic family, execution of austere and pious activities certainly cause one to take pride in himself. Similarly, if one enjoys prestigious position within society because his parents are highly respected members of the Varnashram social system, one becomes even more infatuated with himself. But if, despite these excellent material qualifications, one does not feel even a tinge of pride within himself, he is to be considered the dearmost servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the last paragraph of the purport, comment by Shibhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When a devotee understands the process of bhakti yoga is complete in itself, and he becomes absorbed in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, the supremely merciful personality of Godhead affectionately lifts such a first-class devotee onto his own lap. So here's another quality of a first devotee. He's in the lap of the Lord, because he's absorbed in hearing and chanting. And he knows that bhakti yoga is everything. So this is... Although he may have all the material qualification, he's not proud. This is the highest devotee. Verse 52. When a devotee gives up the selfish conception by which one thinks, this is my property and that is his, and when he's no longer concerned with the pleasures of his own material body or indifferent to the discomforts of others, he becomes fully peaceful and satisfied. So this, I thought this was a very interesting...
Can you repeat?
Yeah. When he's no longer concerned with the pleasures of his own material body or indifferent to the discomforts of others. Indifferent to discomforts of others. Yeah. He's not indifferent. So most people are the opposite. They're very concerned with their own material comforts, and they're indifferent to the discomforts of others. He should not be indifferent to the discomforts of others. So the Bhagavad Gita verse also, one who doesn't put anyone into disturbance or is not disturbed himself. 12th chapter, I think it's the 15th verse of Bhagavad Gita. 12th. I'm just remembering this verse. He considers himself simply one among all the living beings who are equally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a satisfied Vaishnava is considered to be at the highest standard of devotional service. So satisfaction is a symptom, another symptom of the highest Vaishnava. He's satisfied with Krishna, and he's not indifferent to other people's discomforts. Not like he's in his own world and he doesn't care about other people. But he's very concerned. Prabhupada had that. He was concerned, even if you hear Shutakirti speak, that he would have a blanket. He was cold. He gave him... Shutakirti was sleeping in a cold place in Los Angeles, sleeping on the floor in a cold room. And he didn't even have a blanket. And so then Prabhupada gave him, he took him to his closet and said, choose one of these. Prabhupada had all these opulent, beautiful quilts, sleeping bags. So then Shuddhakirti took a very beautiful one. And then he went, and then one of the brahmacharis said, why don't you come and sleep with us in the temple? Because in the old days, nobody had beds, and everybody was on the floor. And the brahmacharis were on the floor in the temple. So the same in Calcutta temple, everybody was on the floor. We were all on the floor. I was on the floor for 17 years, or 18 years, I think. So there he was on the floor, and there was all these austere brahmacharis, and they all had these little... they weren't warm enough, and here he was with this big, huge quilt of Prabhupada and all these other brahmacharis, and one of them asked, oh, Prabhu, you think you could give me that quilt? And Shuddhakirti gave it away. Then back he was again, cold and shivering the whole night, and Prabhupada said, how come you're still cold? He said, well, you know, Prabhupada, this brahmachari asked me, he said, no, I'm giving you another one, don't give it away. So, and Prabhupada, he noticed if there was somebody, a Mataji didn't have a sweater, or somebody was walking barefoot on the stones. In Juhu, we used to go walk on the beach with Prabhupada, but before, to get to the beach, just before the beach, there were all, it was like how in India, how they make roads, but they don't finish them. So they had this, the road to the beach was very huge, sharp stone. You remember those stones?
Gravel.
Oh, even gravel. I remember when they weren't even into gravel yet. They were just like huge rocks. Because I remember going on them myself. And there were these huge, big stones. And to get to the beach, you had to go on them. And a lot of devotees were just barefoot. And Prabhupada was very concerned when he would see the devotee. I think Guru Kripa got cut his foot. He said, why are you walking barefoot? So, yeah, it was, Prabhupada was very, he would notice things all the time. Burijan, I think, also has an example when he was on a morning walk with Prabhupada in Japan or somewhere, but I can't remember the exact story. That Burijan wasn't dressed warmly, and Prabhupada said, oh, I think it is very cold here now, we should go back. It was Burijan, he was noticing that Burijan was cold. And that's why Prabhupada would notice these things. Even though, you know, he's the first class Uttamadhikari, temples all over the world. But he noticed all these things. He noticed devotees' discomfort. So let's go to verse 53. Lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are sought even by the greatest of demigods, such as Brahma and Shiva, who have all accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their life and soul. A pure devotee of the Lord can never forget those lotus feet in any circumstance. He will not give up his shelter, the lotus feet of the Lord, for a single moment. Indeed, not for half a moment, even in exchange for the benediction of ruling and enjoying the opulence of the entire universe. Such a devotee of the Lord is to be considered the best of the Vaishnavas. Purport. According to Śrīla Swāmī, one may ask, if one were able to gain the opulence of the entire universe in exchange for leaving the Lord's lotus feet for just half a moment, what would be the harm in leaving the Lord's lotus feet for such an insignificant amount of time? So if you just leave Krishna for half a second, I will give you the whole universe. What's wrong with that, says Śrīla Swāmī? The answer is given by the word akunta smriti. It is simply impossible for a pure devotee to forget the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, since everything that exists is in fact an expansion of the Supreme Lord. Wherever he looks, he sees Krishna's lotus feet. So how can he forget? Is there any place that Krishna's lotus feet are not there? So it's not possible for him to forget. It is simply impossible. Okay, since nothing is separate from the Lord, a pure devotee cannot think of anything but the Lord. Nor can a pure devotee contemplate ruling or enjoying universal opulence. Even if given all the opulence of the universe, he would immediately offer it at the lotus feet of the Lord and return to his position of as a humble servant of the Lord. So I remember, I think it was your spiritual master, Giriraj Maharaj, my godbrother. His father once offered him $1 million, I think, if he would just leave Krishna consciousness.
And I think you offered to Srila Prabhupada.
You offered to Prabhupada. I'll give you $1,000,000.
No, he didn't offer to Srila Prabhupada.
I think he offered it to...
No, I remember he told...
Anyway, you have a different... Whatever. Anyway, it's the same idea. That he was offered $1,000,000. And to leave Prabhupada's lotus feet. But he did not accept that $1,000,000. And other devotees are in a similar position. I think Brahmananda tells a story, funny story, how he took all his life savings and gave it to Srila Prabhupada. I think it was some thousands of dollars, 5,000, I don't know.
$5,000.
He gave it to Prabhupada.
He took everything that he had from his
bar mitzvah.
All the investments.
All the investments.
Finally matured after 10 years.
After 10 years.
And he just
gave it to Prabhupada. Then he went to see Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was sitting there, and his books were there, the first three volumes of Bhagavatam. And Brahmananda was thinking, maybe he'll give me the books, because, you know, I just gave everything. And so he asked Prabhupada for the books. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, that will be $16. And Brahmananda didn't have any money at that point. The books are separate. The books are separate.
He said it didn't take him any time to give that $5,000.
Yeah, Brahmananda said it was really easy to give that $5,000, but to get that $16 was really hard because he didn't have any money after that.
But
it took him a long time.
It was also because he thought that Prabhupada owed him something.
Yeah, he thought, oh, Prabhupada has to give me these books now.
I just gave him
$5,000. Or I said, that will be separate. Yeah, so Prabhupada, he was very clever. He was very clever.
He could read the heart.
He could read the heart. You know, Brahmananda was saying, oh, I gave him $5,000 now. I should surely get these books. No.
I deserve
these books, at least, worth $16. Yeah. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. So, yes, the devotee, they will not give up the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada or Krishna for anything of this world. It's worth, I mean, there's no comparison between $1,000,000 and Prabhupada's lotus feet. No comparison. So now we have a little comment from Jiva Goswami Bhaktisiddhanta. Again, we're referring to that part of Bhagavatam. Oh, we're in verse 53. That's correct. So, Jiva Goswami said that this verse 53 says, this verse explains that when all material desires are destroyed, the heart becomes plunged into pure goodness. At that time, the heart is qualified to receive the direct appearance of the Lord. So here again, we're back to Nashta Praesh Abhadeshu. The same verse is referred to. When all material desires are destroyed, the heart becomes plunged into pure goodness. So material desires means he won't give up the Lord's lotus feet for anything material. All material desires are destroyed. That time, the heart is qualified to receive the direct appearance of the Lord. And then he quotes 1:2:19, which is after Nashta Parisha Bhadeshu. Then, as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, that's Nishta, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance like lust, desire, and hankering disappear from the heart. Devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. So it seemed, I mean, I hadn't planned on it, but it seems to be a theme of this class today. Nashta Prayesha Vadreshu and Nishta. It's a recurring, seems to be recurring in these verses. Okay, 54. How can the fire of material suffering continue to burn the hearts of those who worship the Supreme Lord? The Lord's lotus feet have performed innumerable heroic deeds, and the beautiful nails on his toes resemble valuable jewels. The effulgence emanating from those nails resembles cooling moonshine, for it instantly relieves the suffering within the heart of the pure devotee, just as the appearance of the moon's cooling light relieves the burning heat of the sun. So the pure devotee has the lotus feet of the Lord in his heart. That's another qualification. Read the purport, paragraph 1. When the moon rises, the expansion of its rays drives away the distress of the sun's fierce heat. Similarly, the cooling rays emanating from the lotus nails of the personality of Godhead's lotus feet vanquish all distress for the Lord's pure devotee. According to the Vaishnava commentators, it is understood from this verse, the material lust exemplified by uncontrolled sexual desire is exactly like a blazing fire. The flames of this fire burn to ashes the peace and happiness of the conditioned soul, who perpetually wanders in 8,400,000 species of life, vainly struggling to extinguish this intolerable fire. Pure devotees of the Lord place the Lord's cooling, jewel-like lotus feet within their hearts. Thus all the pain and suffering of material existence are extinguished. So you can meditate on the conch shell, which carries water to Krishna's lotus feet, the water pots and the umbrella, which all protect you from the miseries of material existence. So the last verse for today. Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind to the conditioned souls that if they call upon him by speaking his holy name, here we're back to the holy name. So this is the conclusion. We should take this as a conclusion, the holy name. Even unintentionally or unwillingly, the Lord is inclined to destroy innumerable sinful reactions in their hearts. Here's the good news. Therefore, when a devotee who has taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet chants the holy name of Krishna with genuine love, Supreme Personality of Godhead can never give up the heart of such a devotee. One who has thus captured the Supreme Lord within his heart is to be known as Bhagavata Pradhana, the most exalted devotee of the Lord. So paragraph 2 of this purport. There's a lot of paragraphs. Paragraph 2. That is, according to Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, we won't say the Sanskrit, if a devotee is absorbed in loving transcendental service of Krishna directly or indirectly, he's always glorifying the Lord by transcendental loving service. So even if he chants the holy name of Krishna with improper attention due to being absorbed in the Lord's service, the mercy of the Lord purifies his heart of all sinful reactions. That is in the purport of 55. Second paragraph. Yes. So an example of this is my godbrother, what's his name? I can't remember it now. Sri, huh? No, not Jayananda. Yeah, that also. He would fall asleep while he was chanting. But there was another devotee, I can't remember his name now. Anyway, he was working 20 hours a day, and he was sleeping 4 hours a day, and he had no time to chant his rounds. So, I mean, that was our normal schedule in the old days. Wasn't it? I had 4 hours sleep and 20 hours deity worship, but I got time to chant, yeah? Also, Vibhu Chaitanya. Acha. He was also like that. So anyway, this devotee, he had no time to chant his rounds. So he asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, I'm working. I'm doing service. So, and this was no joke. I mean, he was doing service 20 hours a day. It's probably New Vrindavan or someplace like that. Well, everywhere was like that, right? 20 hours a day. I mean, I had that in Calcutta. 20 hours deity worship, 4 hours sleep. And then, you know, chanting. I could chant because I had deity watch. But he had no time to chant. He asked Prabhupada, so what am I supposed to do? He said, well, you can sleep less. So this devotee, he took his instruction to heart. I can't remember his name for the life of me. But anyway, so 2 hours a day, he would go into the shower and turn on the shower and chant his rounds, because otherwise he would fall asleep while he was chanting. And there, 20 hours he would sleep, and 2 hours he would sleep, and 2 hours he would go in the shower and chant his 16 rounds. I don't know. Some shower. In those days, I don't think we had hot water. Now you have everything. But the early days, we were lucky to have water in Calcutta. What to speak of hot water. Yeah, we didn't even have water, you know, what to speak of hot water. Absorbed in the Lord's service. It's heart of all sinful reactions. Yeah, so then I'll tell you the rest of the story. So he was doing that, and then one time Prabhupada came, and this devotee went with Prabhupada on a home program. And so they had a big feast. And after the feast, Prabhupada saw this devotee was so falling asleep. So you go and take rest in the other room. So this devotee went and had was sleeping in one bed. And after about a half hour, he heard some noise, and then he saw Srila Prabhupada coming in the room, and Prabhupada is going to take rest in the bed right next to him. And then he went, he got offered his base. Prabhupada said, no, you just stay there. And so he was sleeping just a few inches from Prabhupada. So that was Prabhupada's reciprocation for not sleeping, that he got to sleep right next to Prabhupada. Of course, he didn't sleep, I don't think, in that time, but it was an interesting reciprocation from Prabhupada. I can't remember his name. Shri.
I remember hearing that first part of that story, but yeah. I remember who it was.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it's in the memories.
That's Prabhupada. Astonishing.
Yeah. Yeah. So he didn't have time to chant properly. In Jayananda too, he was always falling asleep, and while he was chanting or during class, he couldn't hear properly. Okay.
We're chanting for service. I'm doing service, so I don't need to chant.
Yeah, we can use it as an excuse, but actually, this is not what that means. So Vishwanath has a little comment. This is the essence of all the qualities. So this last verse is the essence of the Mahabhagavat. The Lord himself does not give up the heart of his devotee. What is the problem with heaps of sins? The Lord just being addressed even accidentally destroys a multitude of sins. What to speak of chanting with a taste for rasa? This verse answers the question, what do the devotees speak? So what do the devotees speak? Holy name, Harinam. Why does the Lord not leave the temple of their hearts? The devotee binds the lotus feet of the Lord to his heart by the ropes of affection. Just as Yashoda bound Krishna to the mortar by her prem, the Lord who binds all jivas by the chains of maya is bound by the chains of prema by the devotee. So I'll just read one last quote and we'll finish from Madhya 25:128. Bhaktama prema bandhyache hridai bittare janitya porita dekai amare. A highly elevated devotee can bind me, Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his heart by love. Wherever he looks, he sees me and nothing else. Okay, so we'll stop there. Any questions or comments? We still have 15 minutes. Yes. Yeah. The real humility is what's described here by the Mahabhagavat. Even though you have everything, you think that, where is that verse? Yeah. One of the verses we read. About being born in a good family and all that. Oh, here. 51. Birth in an aristocratic family, execution of austere and pious activities certainly cause one to take pride in himself and then a prestigious position in society. If despite these excellent material qualifications, one does not feel a tinge of pride within himself, he is to be considered the dearmost servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I think your question is, what's the difference between this feeling of inferiority complex and real humility? If you want to know the answer, I can tell you a good place to look, and that is there's a book, Japa Meditations, by Dhanardhar Swami. In the back of the book, there's a whole section on humility, and it tells what's the difference. But off the top of my head, there's another saying that one who is feeling that he's the lowest, I mean, not like the pure devotee, lowest, but one who is doing it out of false ego, he's thinking a lot about himself. Whereas one who's really humble is not thinking, what is that, you know that saying? I can't remember exactly.
Being humble doesn't mean to think less of himself, but to think of
himself. Yeah, right. Okay, being humble does not mean to think less of oneself, but to think of oneself less. So one who has this false ego, I'm so low, I'm this or that, they're thinking about themselves all the time. And I know there was one devotee.
All I think of.
It's all you think of. And I met one devotee. You asked her to do some service. She says, "Oh no, I'm too low to do service. I'm too unqualified to do any service." So what are you going to do? Yeah.
This list of material miseries, when it talks about I'm feeling low, I have an inferior complex.
Yeah.
Psychologically, what happens is you see these kind of people exhibiting a lot of bravado.
Yeah.
To make up for their inferior complex, so they go up, they dominate and they try to rule other people.
Mm-hmm.
Just to cover up their own sense
of feeling of insecurity.
Insecurity,
yeah.
Basically. This is how you can actually feel a little pity for these kind of people.
So one doesn't think less of himself, but thinks of himself less.
Yeah, actually.
That's what the like in a capsule of what the difference is. So the pure devotee, he's thinking of Krishna all the time. And so compared to Krishna, who am I? And compared to all these wonderful devotees, who am I? Yeah, that's how they... As Prabhupada, he told Bob Cohen, "You are the best devotee." He's this Peace Corps worker wandering into Mayapur somehow. And Prabhupada's in his hut, and Prabhupada says, "You're the best devotee." So, yeah, and Bob couldn't figure that one out. But Prabhupada explained. Yes.
Some kind of comment.
Yeah, then comment.
You were making the statement that the Uttama Bhagavat, the age is setting in, I forgot.
Okay.
The characteristic of the Mahabhagavat is that when you see him, you immediately feel.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya said that, yeah.
Yeah, that's from the
Chaitanya. That's from Chaitanya Chaitanya. Yeah.
So one time there was one devotee, about 13 years ago, she was a widow, and then she had joined Krishna consciousness, and then her spiritual master left, and then she went to Radhakund, and she started living there, and she was a very nice person, very kind, very sweet, very nice person. And then after that, she took initiation from the most prominent Babaji in Radhakund, and when I asked her, "Why did you do that?" She said, "You know, I was just sitting there at Raghunathas Goswami's Samadhi chanting, and then he walked in, and just when I saw him, I was thinking, made me think of Krishna. I felt like chanting when I met him. So then I couldn't say anything to refute that argument, because this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
From Chaitanya Charitamrita.
And the person may be a Mahabharata too.
Yeah, I don't know. We cannot say.
But generally in our tradition, from what we hear from Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Gopeshwar Babaji Maharaj, feel a little hesitant.
Right.
But I couldn't argue with her, because she said, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it says that that person whose very presence invokes the name of Krishna within your heart.
Well, a lot of times devotees go on the street and they'll even say, "Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram," you know, just to any devotee who has a dhoti and tilak, and, you know, Western devotee. So that doesn't mean they're...
Or an Indian, any white person.
Yeah. If you're, that, you know, it's... So by that logic, I mean, but that doesn't mean that we're all Mahabhagavats. But I think we are representatives of Srila Prabhupada. If we... dress like that, and we can, and Prabhupada can give that power.
We're supposed to come up to that level. That's a general idea.
Yeah. If we dress as Prabhupada wanted us to, in saris and dhotis and tilak and neck beads, then it will help people to remember Krishna, and they may even think of Krishna by seeing us.
And ask questions. And ask chant.
Right. Well, yeah, in India it does. A lot of people, they will say Hare Krishna, Hare Ram.
No, but there's a quality to the chanting.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. So any other comments? Yes, questions?
I just was meditating on one sentence in the first book.
Mm-hmm. Which book? Okay.
It's the first book of 49, Cause of Misery in the Soul.
Okay.
When he identifies himself with intelligence, he suffers profound existential bitterness and frustration deep within his heart.
Yeah.
So many times in life we undergo traumas, and our right. intelligence has to process these traumas.
Okay. In our life we undergo traumas, and our intelligence has to process yeah. these traumas.
Now, to avoid this existential bitterness and frustration, can we process these traumas through the principles of Shruti and Smriti, through the principles of the Bhagavatam?
Can we process these traumas through the principles of Bhagavatam?
So in the Bhagavatam, like in this verse 49, causes of miseries are explained and analyzed.
Right.
Give our intelligence, our own suffering in the light yeah. of these principles.
Mm, yes. So your question is, can we process?
Yeah, because otherwise, one ends up with bitterness and frustration.
Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, we end up with bitterness and frustration if we do not process our trauma through the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, so that was a comment. Yeah, thank you.
I think that's what was meant here. If we identify with the intelligence which is not sheltered in
yeah.
the Guru and Krishna,
yeah. yeah, that's the point.
We can never process the cause of misery and everything through material intelligence. We can't find the solution. That's why the frustration. Mm-hmm. Intelligence will keep searching, and it could not find yeah. the solution.
Yeah, our intelligence will just keep on lamenting and becoming bitter, and you know, why did this happen to me? Yeah, you know, what is the cause? You know, then what, when we understand the principles of Bhagavatam.
Another point related to these three verses, the Uttam, the Matyam, the Bhakti Bhakta.
Right.
I was trying to analyze how it relates to the stages of consciousness from Anamaya to Anamaya and so on. And how it relates to the Madhurya Kadambini.
Madhurya Kadambini.
Where you have the stage of Nishtha and Anaknivritta Nishtha and so on.
Right.
I think it's important to understand how this relates in the whole. To analyze ourselves, where am I?
Mm-hmm.
I discussed with Balananda Maharaj these verses, and the Prakriti Bhakta, it's going up till the end of Nishtha.
Up to the end of
Nishtha. Nishtha is going to the end of Nishtha.
End of Nishtha.
And after Nishtha, then the stages after that, There the Madhyama Vikara begins.
Mm-hmm.
But then the question arises, yes, you have all these categories, but it's difficult to say we are a Kanishtha or we are a Madhyam, because we have threads of the Madhyam and also this from the Kanishtha. So in that sense, how is this helping us?
How is it helping us if you can't figure it out, if you have traits from both the Kanishtha and the Madhyama? Well, one thing it can help, when if you look at your life from the time you joined to the present time, and you can see at the beginning what traits you had at the beginning and how it's different now as a devotee. I could see I had a lot more Kanishtha in the beginning. I didn't appreciate devotees that much as I do now.
A lot of bitterness.
And fighting, you know, a lot of... You think you're the best devotee in some way, and you take devotees for granted, and you fight with devotees, and now, you know, it's a lot more peaceful. I've become a lot more peaceful. And when I look over my life and I see... I remember one of our devotees in Calcutta Temple, one of my godbrothers said, I threw him out of the temple the first day he came. He was a hippie. And, well, the problem was we had this bathtub in the bathroom, and you turn the tap was always on, and so whatever water was in there was what we had to use, and I was the pujari, and I needed a lot, you know. We only got about this much every day, and so he goes in there and takes a bath and lets all the water out. So he said I threw him out of the temple. So, you know, I've become much more peaceful now than in those days. Of course, that didn't stop him from being a devotee. He still persevered. So, yes, we learn to tolerate. We learn to tolerate as the years goes on more and more, and accept things as Krishna's mercy more and more, and we appreciate. Our appreciation for devotees goes way up. It goes way up. Before, when we were just new, you know, we didn't understand devotees. You don't understand.
Still hard to understand.
Okay. Yes, Prashanta, you have a comment.
Yeah, I was thinking of Prabhuji saying that just as in Madhurya Kadamani we see how the eradication of the anartha is gradually pervading. Initially, yeah. It's like localized. It's like
right.
It's, something is destroyed and not everything.
Yeah, at Nishta something's destroyed. So, and then
similarly, progressing towards Nishta, is a bit like this, that some aspects of our life become more steady and some other aspects are not yet fully together. So in that way there is a progress towards Nishta. For some people, you know, they become fixed in one part of their sadhana.
Right.
Some others become fixed more in sense control, or some become fixed in study.
In good qualities.
There are people become fixed up in different areas according to their personal development. But full nishta is there when the steadiness is more all pervading and there is steadiness in chanting.
And you can see your progress from Kanishta to Madhyama. How in the beginning I thought, well, why, you know, what's the need of preaching? You know, what I should just study and read the books and get myself together. Of course, in those days, we didn't think like that. We just went out and chanted Hare Krishna on the street. We did that. But sometimes we didn't have time to get ourselves together. No. We just chanted Hare Krishna. Somehow I found time to read, though. Somehow I don't know.
I remember when I found time to read, I was criticized, wanted to know what my schedule was. I had so much free time to
read. Oh, in our temple, we had classes in all the books. Nectar of Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Of course, there weren't many books, so I guess. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, we'll stop here now. The time is up. Thank you for sitting so patiently and long today. Sometimes classes will go to 2:30. 2:30 is the actual official ending time, but a lot of classes will finish before that, like 2 o'clock, probably 2. So Hare Krishna goes to Srila Prabhupada. And tomorrow, Bhurijan will take over, and he will answer the next questions of the Maharaj Nimi to the and Navyogendras. Yes. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.